The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis. Welcome to the social studio.
Thank you for downloading the weekly podcast from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Trevor Dann, focusing this week on the bid for the new national multiplex from Listen to Digital. We'll hear from Phil Riley in a minute. Also to come, the latest news, David Lloyd's radio moments, and a chance to meet an expat hospital radio DJ making waves in Portugal. But first, if you'll bear with me, an apology. A couple of weeks ago, while I was asking a rather clumsy question of Paul Eaton at Arkiva, I gave the impression that the PAD industry body Digital Radio UK are in favour of switching off FM. Well, its leader, Ford Ennals, has written to put me right. He says, quote, "We believe that dual transmission is wasteful, inefficient and ultimately unsustainable. FM is full, and we think that a managed transition to DAB as the predominant broadcast platform for radio will support innovation, competition and the provision of consumer choice. But," Ford emphasises, "there are no plans to shut down FM, and we would expect to see it sustained and used as a platform for the broadcast of small local commercial radio and community radio services." So I'm happy to correct my sloppy journalism. Thank you very much, Ford. And now the Listen to Digital bid. Phil Riley of Orion put it together, and he's been talking to me from one of Free Radio's studios in Birmingham.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
So, Phil, what is it about another digital national multiplex that attracts you and your consortium? Why do you want to do it?
Well, I think, I mean, I'm quite excited about it. I've always loved DAB and loved the fact that it offers more choice. And when Ed Vasey stood up just over a year ago and said, we think we should, you know, have the second national up again, I started scratching my head and thinking, well, I wonder whether there's a role for Orion Media in that, and decided that there was an opportunity for us, and hence why we're here today talking, because I thought there was an opportunity and worked hard to bring on some partners and develop some ideas and thoughts and get a bid in.
Is the big driver commerciality or creativity? You know, is this about offering more and better radio, or is it about making some money? Or I guess you're hoping it can be both.
Well, one always hopes both. If you're in a commercial environment in the media, you want to be creative, but you want to be commercial, don't you? I think for me, reading the application document, the advertisement from Ofcom, they talked a lot about competition. And I thought that's something that I'm pretty keen on myself. I've always felt that wherever I've been battling the big boys and trying to take on the established interests and doing something new and interesting. And I thought, I feel as though that's possibly where the niche approach is for DAB 2, is to be a bit of a challenger brand and try and take on the big boys. So that's what appealed to me about it.
Why will your idea work where Channel 4 radio didn't?
Well, that's a very difficult question to answer, because I wasn't privy to everything that went on inside the Channel 4 bid. I think Channel 4 had aspirations which I don't think DAB at the time could deliver for them. I think that's the reality, was that they had an aspiration to do something, you know, was great. You know, I think if you went and talked to Bob, I think Bob Shannon today would say we were really ambitious. But the level of penetration DAB perhaps 5 or 6 years ago just didn't allow you to run the numbers on that and say, actually, it stands a good chance of success. Whereas the numbers have definitely changed. I mean, DAB is definitely, from a national perspective, a recognised, valuable asset these days in a way that I think 5 or 6 years ago, you'd have struggled to make that case. Whereas today, I think it is definitely something that people want to be on and in some cases need to be on.
Now, I know you like a research group, a focus group. You like looking into what audiences want. Phil, I guess you've done some work that has told you that there's a demand for this. What can you tell me about what audiences, potential audiences, are saying to you?
Well, the research that we did scanned the dial of everything that was already there on DAB, and we said, okay, if that's what's already there, here's a bunch of other things that we could possibly do. Which of those do you think would add value for you and make you more likely to buy a DAB set? Because in the end, that's part of the driver for this, is what's going to make people buy a digital set. And out of all the various services that we propose to people, and we propose quite a number. The ones that sort of boil down to the ones that seem to attract them were essentially, by and large, the ones that we've offered in the multiplex bid. So, you know, I don't think we've done anything other than respond to what listeners are telling us are the gaps in the current national coverage and what will be an appropriate range of services to fill those gaps.
It occurred to me, just thinking about your career and reading this list of radio stations, that having been a producer and having been a commercial radio executive for so many years, you now find yourself almost being like a commissioning editor. Is this new territory for you?
I think that description is perhaps a bit flattering, grandiose. I think in reality, you're not a commissioning editor. You are a platform deliverer. You know, we're offering a platform here for service providers to come along and make them make their programming and sell their wares, if you like. And I think we've identified gaps that can be filled, and we've gone out and talked to people and said, "Do you want to fill this gap?" And most of them have come back and said, "Yes, can we do that?" And it's great to have a collection of suppliers on board. But you know, over and above us offering them the slot and them fulfilling their format and getting the format ticked by Ofcom, I'm not going to be telling these guys how to do their job or how to make their radio stations. That's entirely up to them. So the commissioning editor tag is perhaps a bit grandiose. But I know what you're saying, what you're getting at. And there's certainly a degree of satisfaction, I think, for me, looking at that list of 18 different services to think, gosh, you know, if we're successful and we can deliver all of those, that's a great degree of additional listening choice for people. And that's a good thing. And if I in some way can be responsible for that, then great. That's a tick in the box for me.
I won't go through all the stations that you're proposing to offer. People can read that list on your website or Radio Today or indeed Ofcom. But the one that's attracted the most controversial comment is the potential that you might be working with Kelvin McKenzie, not a very popular man in some parts of the UK, notably Liverpool. What's the point of getting into bed with Kelvin, Phil?
Well, I mean, Kelvin wasn't very popular in Liverpool when he was running TalkSport. So I think the Liverpool thing's a bit of a, you know, red herring, to be honest. I appreciate why he's unpopular there, but I don't think it makes much difference to this. I think the reality is that, as Kelvin quite rightly said to me, he thinks there's an opportunity for more sport on the radio. And by the way, so too does the other bid, because they're proposing a second sports channel too. So clearly we both identified that actually sports radio is potentially underserved in the UK. Kelvin thinks he can do a job of challenging the existing sports radio providers with a new service. And certainly there's a lot of sport out there for radio stations to go at. So, you know, and he's, if anybody's going to get backing to launch a new sports service, it's going to be somebody like Kelvin, who's got the experience and the expertise and the knowledge to be able to bring investors in to help support that, because that's not a cheap thing to do. That's going to require some cash up front to buy rights and hire in, you know, pretty good presenters, etc. So you know, Kelvin's the only guy really who's going to be able to do that.
As I mentioned in my introduction, we have tried to get your technology partners, Babcock, to talk to us, really because I think many people don't know who they are. Why are they so reluctant to, you know, to talk to the press, Phil?
Well, I don't think they're reluctant to talk to the press. I was going to say it's just you, Trevor. No, that would be unfair.
Thanks for that.
No. I think they just are. They're a very, very large corporate organisation who have the normal rules about putting up spokespeople in front of the media on topics. They're very sensitive about their share price and all of that sort of stuff. And one can understand that. But, you know, people shouldn't be, or people might be surprised about Babcock if they knew just how big they were and how important they were in transmission and what expertise and knowledge they've got. I mean, they've been broadcasting the World Service on, you know, shortwave, medium wave and FM since 97. They maintain over 650 transmitter sites. They employ 300 engineers around the world. They operate 3 high-power broadcast sites in the UK. They've got a London-based control room, which I've been in, that manages all of the customer content for radio radio and TV. They've just acquired WRN Broadcast to enhance their broadcast capability, and WRN distribute 250 TV and radio channels. So they've got a fantastic breadth of expertise. They're not as well known in UK commercial radio as Arqiva, for sure, but they've got no lack of knowledge about what they're doing in this particular sector, and they're great partners for us to have in the bid.
And did you go to them, or did they come to you and say, we want to get into British domestic radio and we want to compete with Arqiva?
Well, of course, they bid for the BBC contract some time ago. So there was no secret that they were interested in being part of the UK broadcast transmission infrastructure. Actually, I came to them because of working with the guys at Folder, Greg and Matt. And Greg Watson had already been talking to Babcock. So it was a sort of meeting of minds, really, rather than one person approaching another.
So looking at the two bids, I characterise them as the usual suspects versus the outliers. Is that how you'd see it?
I wouldn't use the word outliers for us. I would say we were the challenger bid. I think we are trying to challenge the status quo, where our service providers are by and large newer operators outside the mainstream, outside the big players, who hopefully will tick the box that Ofcom have specified about bringing competition and choice into the marketplace. And I think that was the guiding principle behind everything that I wanted to do with this bid, was what can we do to increase choice? And we've got choice in terms of a new transmission provider, choice in terms of a new multiplex owner, and choice in terms of lots of new services from new providers. And I hope that that ticks the boxes for Ofcom.
And one final thing, you've changed your job title. Does this mean that you're drifting away a little bit from Orion?
No, not at all. I'm still the largest individual shareholder in the company after our corporate backers. I'm chairman of the trading company. I'm sitting here in a free radio studio doing this. I'm not sitting in the corner office 5 days a week signing invoices, but I'm still very heavily involved in the company and will be, for as long as Orion is around, I shall be very heavily involved in it.
Phil Riley, thank you very much for your time. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and we wish you well.
Thanks, Trevor.
News now from Roy Martin.
Thank you, Trevor, and thank you, Phil. BBC local radio stations are launching on Freeview around the English regions. Around 10 services are now online on channels 719 to 722, and the BBC tells more will be added shortly. A new news service has launched for radio stations in the UK and abroad, featuring UK news. Radio News Hub provides an hourly bulletin delivered just before each hour via Dropbox for automated entry to playout systems. And Fern Cotton is leaving Radio 1 after 10 years. She's pregnant with her second child and says this is the right time to move on for family time. Although I'm not sure Annie Mac really thought it through before mentioning it on her show.
And talking about Radio 1 changes, got a big up Clara Amfo, man. What a gig. And no doubt, she's going to absolutely smash it in Fern Cotton's slot.
That's the very latest from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Roy Martin.
After this, David Lloyd's Radio Moments, and then we're off to Portugal.
Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis, offer you elegantly integrated products and intelligent one-stop shopping for all your studio needs. Discover a full range of innovative studio products. Play out by Wide Orbit, Music Master Scheduling, Stirlitz, Newsboss, Larvo, Telos, Axia, Omnia, Digigram and Commotion. Visit bionics.co.uk today.
100 years of radio.
It's 10 years this week since we lost this voice.
Here's number 31 on the KOL Tunex this week for the week of June the 26th. Here he is, old Tommy Jones. What's new, pussycat? I don't know. Have a look yourself. Oh, mind the dishes.
What's new, pussycat?
Tommy Vance, who died this week in 2005, age 64.
Top 40
Radio 1. And welcome to listeners on VHF who've just joined Radio 1, not only for the top-selling singles of 1983, but for the rest of the evening as well. Now, do not forget, you can hear the nation's top chart show in super stereo right now on VHF.
Tommy began radio in the States, appearing here on Caroline, Radio London and Luxembourg. He was part of the launch team at Capital.
This is an engineering test transmission being made by the Independent Broadcasting Authority.
And appeared on Radio 1 too. Farewell, Tommy. And this week, 7 years ago, it was goodbye to Chris Carey, otherwise known as Spangles Muldoon.
What have I done there? Skeeter Davis until the end of the world, or the end of the world. That came out at the same time as I got my first flat. I left home at 15, and I used to earn about £2, 15 shillings a week to survive on, and I wanted to go it alone. So I got myself a flat and a job and all the rest of the things, and I ended up...
Chris launched Radio Nova and spent many years at Caroline, Luxembourg, Radio North Sea and Birmingham's Buzz FM, which he famously bought for £1. He died this week in 2008. This week in 1992, some of the last in the first tier of commercial stations were finally arriving, completing that UK map.
1992 was not a desperately prosperous time to be launching new businesses. There was quite a bit of recessionary pressure on the overall economy, and I think people thought that a small local radio station in Lincolnshire would be a license to lose money.
This is a test transmission from Lynx FM on 102.2. Lynx
The launch of Lynx FM this week, 23 years ago. And staying with Lincolnshire, the county's digital multiplex was awarded this week, 7 years ago. It's still not on air. This week in 68, John Peel began his lengthy foray into late night Radio 1. And he said in the first programme, this is the first of a new series of programmes on which you may hear just about anything.
And that was Dave Kelly with the... a few short lines, and this LP incidentally isn't released until the first week in August, so we can't tell you what the label is, which is a bit sad, but it's a very good LP anyway, and it's called Blues Like Showers of Rain, and some very good things on there. And it sounds, we've been rather a bluesy sort of evening generally this evening, which sounds that we might be getting into Mike Raven territory, but we're not actually, Mike, in case you're listening, and we were hoping that Mike...
John Peel, who began Late Night Radio 1 this week 47 years ago. 52 years ago, as the BBC flung itself into the swinging 60s, it sought to modernise. The Home Service, which was later to become the germ for Radio 4, well, its controller Gerard Mansell changed its opening theme from this... to this... Yes, Handel's Water Music, all part of the Home Service plan to modernise with a lighter, brighter sound. Simon Mayo graduated from BBC Local Radio to Radio 1 this week in 86.
Truly the most terrifying, scary thing I have done. I mean, I sat there in the studio on my own with everything all lined up and ready to go, and it was Talking Heads, and she was the first track, I remember it, and I needed to get that first voiceover right.
Simon Mayo through till 3 o'clock today, and Gary did say, please make your bit in the middle as much like mine as possible, except not quite as brown.
Simon Mayo, arriving at Radio 1 from Radio Nottingham this week, 29 years ago. Not many programmes last 21 years. This one did.
And round the corner I am. Good morning. It's funny how reticent some people are to give names, whereas others literally fill their postcards with full details of 200 or 300 people they'd like mentioned. At 37 Atherley Road, Shanklin, in the Isle of Wight, lives Mrs. D. Walker. She has a daughter whose home is The Nook, Avenue Road, Shanklin. Well, I'd like to be able to tell you the daughter's name. I'd like to blazon it to the skies. But alas, Mrs. Walker is not forthcoming. It's a pity, because it's her daughter's silver wedding anniversary today.
Housewives' Choice, which launched on the Light programme this week in 1946. It was on air 6 days a week, one of the first music strip shows on British radio. And how great it was back then. We used to read out the whole address, including the house number as well. It's 5 years since Six Music nearly was no more.
The problem with Six Music is it's quite a small audience currently, and it's therefore it's not a station which makes much sense from a value for money point of view. If we built that audience up, The danger is you run absolutely headlong into mainstream commercial radio in this country.
BBC Director General Mark Thompson this week in 2010 recommending the closure of BBC Six Music and the Asian Network by the end of 2011. It was not to be. Happy times this week, 15 years ago, for the BBC's Helen Bowden. She was appointed the second ever female controller of Radio 4.
Monica Sims was the first, yeah. Who used to carry a big transistor radio in her huge handbag, because technology was such that if you wanted to listen, that's all you could do. Really? So, and she wrote me the most wonderful letter when I got the job. Oh, I always used to think, Helen, that men make more fuss about the changes they make, but women just get on with it.
Helen Bowden speaking a couple of years ago, and happy birthday this week to Helen too. So with the end of Radio 4's Gulf War news offshoot, Scud FM, this week 24 years ago.
At the hotel we're staying, the guard at the door is now wearing complete chemical warfare equipment. A man coming out with a towel across his face.
Radio 3 ending AM transmissions 23 years ago.
BBC Radio 3 on VHF and on 1215 kHz, 247 metres medium wave.
Commonwealth Games Radio launching 13 years ago.
And this is Mike Shaft wishing you a very warm welcome to BBC 2002 Commonwealth Games Radio.
Radio Trent extending into Derbyshire 28 years ago.
What will the first record be? Well, that was it. I trust it did.
And James Whale leaving LBC 2 years ago.
Now, continuing our look at some of the capital's more interesting businesses.
Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Thank you, David. And before we close this week, we thought you'd like to hear this report from Rodri Buttrick, the man they're calling Rodders. He's been to Kiss FM in Portugal to meet Cy Freiter, who swapped the nightclubs of Manchester and shifts on hospital radio for the Algarve 10 years ago. Now he's hosting an English language breakfast show.
This is Cy Freiter, Cy Freiter.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
So welcome to the show. It's 3 minutes past nine, 10 degrees in the Algarve. It's 9 degrees in Lisbon city centre. Whatever you're doing today, let us know. 92 650 4041 if you want to be starting your car. We can sort that out for you, no problem at all. You've got me, Rodders and Spike with it all morning.
Hello, it's Rodders here reporting for the Radio Today programme. I'm here in Albufeira in Portugal at the studios of Kiss FM Portugal, and I'm joined by Cy Freiter, the breakfast presenter. You all right, Cy?
Morning, my friend. How the devil are we today?
Yeah, no, very good. I've been having a good old nose around your station. Exciting, interesting place.
It's all right, isn't it? It's different.
Yeah, no, it's certainly different. Who's the station for? Who? What are your listeners like?
The station is... it's Kiss FM. We were based in the Algarve initially. The breakfast show and a few other shows that we've got on made it a huge success, and we're now broadcasting in Lisbon. So from sort of a holidaymaker stroke expat audience, we've now got the capital city of Lisbon. So we've got a huge audience. We've got workers, locals, Portuguese, English, expats, and all the holidaymakers that come out, because all the taxi drivers and all the hotels and stuff, they have Kiss FM. So,
so you're going out on two transmitters, one here in the Algarve and then one over in Lisbon.
Yeah, one in Lisbon. We've actually got the biggest aerial in Europe. It's that high up, but you then buy your strength and it goes out over kilometres wide. But yeah, huge, huge listener base. Huge.
The music you play, a lot of it's mostly... Hit 40 UK.
We kind of brand ourselves as like a top 40 station. It's a pop music station. We generally play. I mean, you've got the Kings of Leon on there. You know, if you tune into the station within 5 minutes of hearing two tracks, you can tell what station you're on. That's the idea. That's what they say you should be able to. We don't play rock. We don't go wild and play rock music. We don't play all the heavy R&B music. It's pop music that you can tap your foot to.
A couple of the songs you've put. There's some Portuguese songs on the playlist. So is there then a sort of smaller part of your audience, which are the people who live here?
We used to have, there used to be laws in Portugal, because we're governed by the radio authorities in Portugal. So they lay down some laws in that we used to have to play 25% of our output used to have to be Portuguese music. And what that did, that generated Portuguese listeners. So when that law was abolished and we now didn't have to, what we did, we honoured the fact that we've still got Portuguese listeners. And we are based in Portugal, so we do play still some Portuguese music. Not as much as we used to, but some of the Portuguese stuff's fantastic. Very, just brilliant. I mean, it's... 90% of the world's music is in English anyway, no matter where you go to. The X Factor winner from Portugal this year, a guy called Berg, he sings his song and won the X Factor by singing an English song.
So for the breakfast show starts at 8 in the morning, which if you're coming, I've just come over from England, and that seems like a lie-in. What, is that had to fit in with the listener's lifestyle?
In the UK, people have to leave early because of traffic and work starts earlier. You know, it's a 9-till-5 regime in the UK. It's not over here. There's no point on a breakfast show at 6 o'clock because there's literally, there'd be nobody listening. You know, the schools all start later. For me, it's better. And it's great for me because, like you say, I get a lie in.
The Lisbon transmitter, that's fairly recent, isn't it?
Last 12 months, that, yeah. The company that owns us is it's a company called Global Diffusion. And they had a spare frequency in Lisbon that was running one of their less money-making stations. So they asked us down in the Algarve, and they just said, you know, do you want this transmitter? We'll broadcast to Lisbon. It'll give us a whole new listenership. And hopefully, the idea was, a whole new advertiser base to sell. They gave us a frequency, 95 FM in Lisbon, and we're on there now. It's brilliant.
Has it made an immediate difference to the listenership?
Huge. Huge base. I mean, we've got a few advertising hoardings now and a few billboards on main roads in and out. But again, now, it gives people in Lisbon an opportunity to listen to something completely different. We're the only English-speaking radio station in Portugal. And again, when you speak to a lot of the foreigners, the English language that they learn, you know, those people between sort of 15 and 25, they learn the English from American films. Well, now they're learning the English from the radio because
someone who sounds northern.
They do, well, yeah, and so they walk around going, I'm going to pub for Bine. You're all right there, lad.
So what are the main differences, do you think, between, let's say, an audience to a breakfast show in England to compare to the audience over here? Are they up for getting involved? Are they constantly
good
texting
question.
In?
It's hard work to get them going, only because it's so new to them. They've never had an interactive breakfast show or an interactive show before, because European radio is generally a DJ babbles on at the end of a record over the last 8 seconds, talks over the first 8 seconds, and that's it. And it's all very, very quick speaking, very fast paced, very informative stuff. They don't have this, right, text now, phone now, we're giving this away, we're giving that away. So all that's new here. But again, we in where we are, we have more people have got pay-as-you-go phones, so it's hard to get them to text in and use the credit
so they're to win likely
a packet
to wanna,
of biscuits. Yeah. The internet, it's hard to get them to listen on the internet because we don't have unlimited packages. It's not a normal thing over here. We don't have broadband, high-speed broadband yet. So again, to get people to listen and join in is very hard. And people won't phone up as well because the telephone lines in the studio are landlines. It costs so much money to use your credit on your phone to phone a landline. So they won't phone in. It's really hard to get going. But we've got a great listener base, and they do. They've come round. It's took me about, I've been doing the breakfast show 3.5 years. It's took me about, probably about 18 months to get them to start to text in, to join in, to phone in.
It seems like the show's a big, massive conversation between you, your co-host, the listeners. What sort of topics go down best with the listeners?
Anything silly. They like to join in with anything that, not so much opinionated answers, more, you know, yes, no questions, red sauce, brown sauce, what's your favourite, salt or pepper? Things like that, they generally join me because I've got a lot of people that have moved here to get away from the hustle and bustle of the UK or wherever they come from, because a lot of people that live here are retired. So they just like a bit of fun in the morning.
But sometimes it does go a little more serious. You ended up talking about one of your contributors having a stroke. Well, how do you suddenly go from something sort of silly and fun to something as down-to-earth and serious as somebody having a stroke?
Because the show is very much about, and a lot of breakfast shows, when you get a presenter on that makes the show his life, what it is, I mean, I talk about on the show about my wife, my family, what I did last night, what I've got coming up this weekend, what friends of mine did, because usually I'm having a good time, and if I'm having a good time, it means I'm doing something fun. But then real life isn't always fun. So the breakfast show has it's got this brilliant capacity to be able to switch and talk about a very serious story. Because if I do something serious, people sit up and go, oh, this is different. And they listen. So again, one of the contributors, a guy called, I have a guy on the show called Cockney Bob. And I phone him up. He's a genuine Cockney. He talks in a funny language that nobody understands, but he's very, very funny. But then he had a stroke about 6 months ago. And I just thought this would be great to say, look, these two comedians are on air all the time. Let's just stop. For a minute, this is, you know, we are serious guys, we are business people, we are real people. My friend's had a stroke, and if talking about it stops another man having a stroke because you recognise the symptoms, we've done a great job.
But do you think there's more freedom to do stuff on the radio over here compared to within the UK? What sort of regulations are you restricted by?
By the bosses?
Yeah, but if talking bosses and then talking radio authority. You don't have Ofcom, but there is a radio authority you're governed by.
We are governed by the Portuguese radio authority, yes. You know, we obviously, you're not allowed to swear, but mm-hmm. we can't mention outside of certain noises anything to do with advertisement. we have what we call a separador, which is a noise that makes the sound of a kiss. We could have chosen any noise, but we chose a kiss because we're called Kiss.
It just has to be any
and any advertisement that we speak about, even if it's, you know, a product placement sort of thing, where I went out last night and had two Cokes. Ideally, I've got to put it inside these separadors because people know then it's an advertisement. We can't mention brand names at all. I mean, other than that, there's not an awful lot. There are rules and regulations, but generally, when you put the headphones on and turn the mic up, all the rules and regulations that you have to stick to, that you don't read in the small print, you do anyway. You know, you stick to them because we're all professionals.
Yeah, it's common sense not to
that's exactly what it is. It's like putting a bracket, you know, part one, don't do anything stupid, just be nice and be good. And that's what we try to do.
Creatively, you seem to be given a fair, from an outsider's perspective, you seem to be allowed to do any features you want to do.
When I started the breakfast show, all my boss said to me was, right, will you do a breakfast show for us? And I was at the time doing a soul show on a Saturday night. I said, well, yeah, what do you want? She went, right, here's the brackets, fill them. And I said, well, what do you want? She went, that's your job. You've got 9 months, you know. You've got 9 months to show us that the station can make money off your show. We'll sell the hours, we'll sell the features, and within 6 months, every hour was sponsored. Three of the seven features I was doing at the time were all sponsored, bringing money in. I don't know whether, if I went back to the UK or any other country that had such strict rules, whether I could do it or not, because I've been given so much freedom to do whatever I want. I mean, I've got great freedom, it's brilliant. Right, so lucky.
Sly Frater, Kiss FM Breakfast Show host, thanks very much.
Thank you, Rodders, and everyone else who helped this week. It's been a TDC production, and we'll see you next time.
The Radio Today programme, with broadcast by Onyx.